Greetings. Sleepy Salsa here on this Monday, October 29th of 2012, and welcome to the 65th episode of the Last Bastille podcast. This broadcast is kindly hosted over at radioforall.net. I should also take this opportunity to mention that the opening theme is Ashley Alicize's A Puzzling Predicament, and the outro will be Bosa's King's Quest, both of them available pursuant to Creative Commons Attribution, specifically CC BY NCSA 3.0 Unported. For more information on Creative Commons, visit them at creativecommons.org. For any other content that may not be of original authorship by yours truly, any such material is used under the sincere intention of fair use. If you wish to understand the nature of the situation we are all suffering under and what can be done about it, feel free to visit the Last Bastille blog, which is located over at The Last Bastille, Bastille is spelled B-A-S-T-I-L-E-E, thelastbastille.wordpress.com. And for this particular episode, we're going to explore more of dissident philosophy, that is the nitty-gritty of why good people oppose the establishment in the first place. And I will be reading for you an article that was originally posted this past August on the 15th over at the Last Bastille blog. It is entitled Unearned Respect. A common misconception that ingratiates itself into the mainstream American psyche is an unmitigated reverence for authority. Something about certain kinds of titled occupations somehow convinces people that it is the office, the badge, or the uniform that must be honored. Such ubiquitous mind control must be deprogrammed from people's heads if liberty is to ever take root in America again. Reactions to the 2009 Obama Joker InfoWars contest are quite revealing. As Charlene Forth of Claremont, Florida put it, quote, "He looks so mean and gruesome and evil, and that this is not something that you want to, as an American, to portray your president as, no matter what you think," end quote. What does Ms. Forth mean by your president? I didn't vote for him, since I don't vote at all anymore. How does Ms. Forth know what my subjective preferences are? Perhaps, as an American, I really do want to portray an agent of the state as mean and gruesome and evil, especially because of what I think. Considering the history of the U.S. federal government, I don't think making one of their mid-level minions look psychopathic is undeserved in the slightest. Even if I was wrong, would that therefore mean that censorship of negative portrayals of thugs in suits is appropriate? I've always wondered why judges and legislators have been referred to as the Honorable So-and-so. I really don't see what honor they have, quite frankly. The tyrants in robes throughout the federal district courts, as well as the state-level courts, have consistently acted as apologists for the misdeeds of government. They wholeheartedly defend both the letter and the intent of the despotic bills that were given the force of law by non-representing representatives. This latter gaggle of government agents have passed batches of legislation that details how American citizens can be kidnapped, stripped of citizenship, or even executed with no due process at all. Perhaps worst of all, what are typically considered law enforcement officers. These American gendarmerie are not your friend, and their purpose is not intended to serve and protect you or your property, ever. They are there to enforce the edicts of the state upon forbidden human activity, and therefore, not only do they serve as the de facto jailers of the average hapless American, but also as revenue generators for their respective agencies. Some cops will claim that their particular department does not have arrest or ticket quotas. The best way to field test this is for these flatfoots to not arrest or ticket anyone for 30 days, and then see what happens to their jobs. At the end of the day, cops are nothing more than individuals who wear blue costumes. They do not have anything inherent within themselves that makes them somehow superior to everyone else, despite statist assertions to the contrary. The only reason they have even the appearance of power is that they are willing to initiate coercive violence against innocent people, because they believe that other individuals gave them the moral right to do so. Just because a codified threat of violence successfully navigates the quagmire of legislative ritual does not mean that now some flatfoot has acquired the ethical legitimacy to do whatever the hell he wants. These gendarmerie need to be taken off their pedestal and regarded as the public nuisance that they are. They are not intrinsically superior to anyone else by virtue of the fact that they carry a badge and a gun, especially considering they die just like everybody else. Don't get me wrong, there are some decent individuals who have been agents of the state. Jesse Ventura was governor of Minnesota, Ron Paul has been a longtime congressman, and I've personally met or known less than a handful of well-intentioned judges and policemen. Unfortunately, from my experience and that of countless others, such seems to be the exception rather than the rule. What I have learned during my brief life thus far is that an office is only as deserving of respect as the quality of the individual inhabiting it. Ventura and Paul deserve my respect, not because the former was a governor and the latter a congressman, but because, as men, they spoke truth to power, as well as continuing to assist others in seeing through the fog. What the oligopolized media would have you believe is that those who serve the state deserve your admiration. What they fail to understand is that government agents, much like everybody else, do not deserve unearned respect. It is completely irrational to ascribe virtue to a fiction. Once people choose to respect individuals on their own merit, instead of worshiping some illusory quality that someone allegedly possesses, then true liberation from the chains of superstition can begin to be outgrown. And again, that was my article on unearned respect, and now for a postscript. It's really kind of disconcerting if you look at contemporary American police officers and how they have become much more thuggish as time goes on. And, you know, I also would suggest, I mean, I know people complain about police brutality or police misconduct or cops hitting people's cameras or obscuring people's cameras or shining like strobe flashlights in them, like what happened to some Free Staters up in New Hampshire not that long ago. Actually, I think it's been less than 2 years. It was like within the past 2 years or so, if I remember correctly. You know, it's not just stuff like that. I would suggest to you folks try and take a look at Roger Roots's research paper entitled "Are Cops Constitutional?" And I'll include a link to that in the podcast description. But yeah, take a look at "Are Cops Constitutional?" Roots's thesis, more or less, is that what he found was that there was what is now commonly considered to be, you know, police departments. There were no, like, standing cops at all, like, during, like, the beginning of the country. And then he goes into more detail about how that all works. So, you know, whenever I've come across people who say that, you know, that the trifecta of the night watchman state, a minarchist government, if you will, one form of which is a republic, that, oh, well, we need the cops, the military, and the courts, at the very least. Well, that's not exactly true now, is it? And then some other people say, well, we need to have, you know, in the Wild West, there were, you know, people would gather together and eventually they elect a sheriff or something. And, you know, that's all well, nice and fine, I guess. That can be approached on its own merit at another time. What I'm more getting at is the fact that instead of the appropriate, you know, minarchist or small government perspective, as far as flatfoots go, is that they're public servants, or supposed to be, let's put it that way. They're supposed to be public servants. The body politic, you know, the vox populi is supposed to be the boss. And the servant is only supposed to, how else do I put it, boss his master around, is if some of the other related masters are infringing on somebody, on the liberties of some other master. It's kind of a bad metaphor, but that's the only way I can explain it right now. You know, at most, that's what it was supposed to be. The servant was mainly supposed to, with the concept of these servants were supposed to be acting as a type of referee amongst different masters. Of course, you know, for those of you who are a little bit more of a religious bent, I did think, if I remember correctly, it was either Christ or God the Father or some other, you know, children's character who mentioned something about, but it was a good point, the human writer that actually wrote it down, that you cannot serve two masters. So while, okay, maybe this is not the best explanation, but in a way, the religious explanation kind of trumps the metaphor I'm giving here, which is kind of the problem with metaphors in general. I mean, some metaphors are accurate, but they can't possibly, even your best metaphors, the ones that seem the most consistent and accurate, don't always account for all the relevant multifaceted variables in a given scenario. So that's kind of a problem, admittedly. But the point here is that, and really the core of the article too, is that you should, even in the best of times, even if the Republic was restored and the government abided by the chains of the Constitution, and federal, and I would also say the 50 state ones too, because there's a lot of guys here, there's a lot of the government agents here in Texas that, I mean, they're just statists. You know, I mean, we don't, I mean, Texans don't even have open carry. Actually, let me back up. We don't even have constitutional carry here, much less open carry. You know, and I keep telling people, yeah, I mean, if you buck it by going technically agorist on them, you're facing, by violating mala prohibita, you're facing about something like a year in jail and or a $4,000 fine or something like that. But I'm going to save that for a future podcast when I read that article. But suffice it to say, very much statist down here, which is in here in Texas, which is kind of a problem. But, you know, Texas, that's where all the patriots are. Yeah, well, you know, the police presence around the Texas Capitol building is amazing. It didn't used to be where you would see a guy like every, one of the Texas State Police with the big hats, like every 5 feet. But it's not just the Texas Capitol building, like they're everywhere, and, you know, at least in downtown Austin anyway, and also along a lot of the more major routes and all that. the point, though, is that there's kind of this worship of them, like they're demigods. You know, there's been a growing distrust of the police, and especially you know, the local cops and stuff like that. But it's not just the situation here where I am geographically; it's also in other parts of the country too. A lot of places in California that I'm aware of have had big police brutality type incidences and whatnot. Yeah, it's, you know, it is what it is, and the other key point, the related one on this, is that they're not acting in their proper role as peace officers, which is the idea is just to keep the peace and prevent, you know, destruction of life, liberty, and property, basically. The old-fashioned Lockean triad, not Jefferson's version. Although, technically, as kind of a side note, if you want to turn it into an equation, life plus liberty plus property equals the pursuit of happiness. So if you don't have the old-fashioned Lockean triad, you have literally no realistic chance of pursuing happiness, so to speak. But yeah, of course, that I should really save that for another time, because that's getting a little bit into the weeds about that. But suffice it to say that the police are very much antithetical to your life, liberty, and property. And you don't even have to believe me. Like I suggest in the article about the cops, if they claim they don't have arrests and ticket quotas, they should, you know, try not arresting or ticketing anybody for 30 days and just see what happens to their jobs. Similarly, just if you think that the claim, not just that I'm making, but other people have made too, that the police are inimical to your liberty, I would just humbly suggest noticing their actions, or if you really want to walk on the wild side, go and talk to one of these guys. I'm not saying do that. I'm just, you know, you're on your own if you decide to do that, because now you're kind of willingly putting yourself into a police interrogation situation, which itself is kind of a separate subject that we'll be gone into later. Suffice it to say, though, just look at their actions, okay? Look at the good, look at the bad. Notice how the relatively few remaining cops there are can't actually act in their as sheepdogs, mainly. Or even when they do or kind of do, they're still constrained by government statutes, whether from at the state level or even a lot of times at the federal level, because in large part because of the congressional power of the purse, they basically dangle funds back to the state level, whether it's city cops, county sheriffs, et cetera, or even state police, or whatever level you're dealing with. They basically they bribe them is a short version, and then people wonder why certain things don't work. And also, as a kind of a side note to kind of wrap up this postscript, some people have suggested this notion of constitutional sheriffs, which is all nice and fine, and I might want to put I might want to put this up on the blog as a kind of a separate, maybe another transcript, kind of like I did with the when I talked to Karen Kiat-Wapwoski or whatever her name is, the lady who writes for LRC, and because I actually talked with a guy on Freedomizer Radio, and which is on BTR, and he even admitted that if you're in a city. Which, that's like most of the population, if you actually look at the population figures. If you're actually in a city or even the suburbs, the so-called constitutional sheriffs will not be able to help you at all, because it's some sort of jurisdiction thing. So it's only for, like, rural people, which is, like, an infinitesimally smaller portion of the population. It's something stupid, like 10%, 5%. It's really, really small, whatever rural population is nowadays. So, So on the issue of constitutional sheriffs, is it a method that works? I would be more than happy to go into that at a later point, but my initial inclination is I'm just going to go ahead and venture a no, because the county sheriffs themselves are susceptible to the congressional power of the purse to be bought and sold and all that. This has happened before many times. If somebody wants to look at the actual history, want to look at the proof, we need to look for more evidence. Is this reality? I need to look for more information. Well, okay, if you're really doubtful of that, I mean, that can be approached on its own merit. What I'm really pointing out here is this worship. It's worship, I mean, because the cops are basically idols for a lot of people. The worship of these guys is completely inappropriate, even if they were peace officers, properly. Even if they were protecting your life, liberty, and property, this worship of them is completely antithetical to any notions of, freedom or your rights or any of these related concepts relating to your Lockean triad. What else can I say? So yeah, stop worshiping the cops. That is really the best place to start. That's really the key point of this. Just stop worshiping them. They're human beings. They're wearing blue costumes. Like I said in the article, they die just like everybody else. What I meant by that was that they're mortal. They will die at some point, just like I will, just like a lot of you listeners will at some point, which is not a comfortable thought, but again, that needs to be handled on its own merit. But suffice it to say in this context, yeah, they're not supermen. Amazingly not, despite what legislative rituals give them supposed powers to incarcerate people and shoot them. But it's not murder, technically, when they do it, but it's murder if you do it. Gotta love that little Orwellian hypocritical doublespeak. But yeah, stop worshiping the guys. Stop it. Just stop worshiping them. And really, that's kind of the takeaway. Now, whatever you decide to do after that, that's your own business. And a lot of those other aspects need to be tackled later. But right now, stop worshiping the cops already. Real cops are not like like the guys that you see in the cop shows on TV that are laden with predictive programming elements. Those aren't real cops. Those are actors. And they're trying to they're basically trying to portray an illusion like all cops, oh, all cops only go after real criminals like serial killers, pedophiles, and rapists. Or you know, counterfeiters, you know, like real criminals. No, most cops, at least from what I've noticed, or at least a significant enough portion of it to be worrisome, and that can be debated later, obviously, or not debated, but that can be ascertained later, is they really like to enforce whatever is prohibited by the state, mala prohibita. They really like to go after folks who are committing victimless crimes, so-called victimless crimes, which itself is a contradiction, but anyway, because a crime under common law actually requires a victim, but again, that's a discussion for another time. It's just nuts. That's why most of the prison population in the United States is in there for so-called nonviolent drug offenses, because you happen to have a certain vegetation in your pocket, or even if it wasn't vegetation, but it was some other, let's just say, exotic substance, in you know, ingestible in your body or not, could just been something else, maybe some, again, exotic hardware, to put it nicely. Yeah, I mean, they'll throw you in jail faster, even if you never killed anybody, there was no harm to anybody, you just happen to have it in your possession. Look, I mean, guys, look at some of the possession statutes on the books, federal, state, local, whatever, you know, body, whatever penal code you're looking at. Look it up sometime. I think you might be surprised just what you're prohibited from carrying. You know, again, with the firearm thing here in Texas, it's, yeah, I mean, if you carry a handgun until, you know, recklessly or, you know, intentionally carrying it, that was my favorite part, then you risk it's like some sort of misdemeanor or something, and you face, you know, XYZ punishments. And I'll get into that in a later podcast probably, but yeah, it's, you know, it is what it is. So how is that providing any set, you know, if a guy walks around, you know, smokes a joint, carries a pistol, oh, what's the technically illegal stuff? Yeah, whatever it all is, it's just, he's a criminal, supposedly. He never harmed anybody, he's not being reckless, not like he's a drunk driver, ran over some kid on a bicycle. There's been no harm at all. But these guys are what make up a huge chunk, if not most of the chunk, of the current inmate population prison. So, like, I mean, why worry about being possibly sent off to a concentration camp at some indeterminable point in the future when the federal government may or may not decide to incarcerate you like they did the Japanese, like those Americans of Japanese ancestry during World War II? That may or may not happen, but what has happened and is continuing to happen, like, in the present, is people sent to jail for victimless crimes. And they're mixed in with hardcore serial killers and rapists. And the cops make that all happen. I mean, to put it another way, they're the boots on the ground that actually grab you and actually throw you. I mean, they're just, now to be fair, they are following the orders of judges, legislators, etc. But they're simply cogs in the wheel. But by having that job, which they voluntarily contracted into when they join, you know, a police department, sheriff's department, etc., or even your run-of-the-mill alphabet soup, you know, federal soup agency, you know, they're agreeing, they want to throw people in prison. It's not like they're being, at least from not that I'm aware of, it's not like, you know, it's not like the government went around with a bunch of other dunderheads and started recruiting, you know, the most muscular guys who are willing to carry guns and force them into a form of indentured servitude to become cops. That's not how it works. These guys choose to do that job, which entails throwing people in prison for stuff that are non-crimes. I mean, that's what we're dealing with. So why do you worship that? Why would anyone worship that? Because technically, the judge does not come to your home and grab you off. It's not a legislator. And even though a lot of times it can be intimidating, technically a bureaucrat can't do it either, although you're more likely to have interpersonal contact with a bureaucrat. Technically, they're not doing it. Strictly speaking, in the sense of very physically, it's police officers that do that. It's a police officer who has to come and knock you on the head with a billy club. It's the police officer who slaps handcuffs on you that causes permanent nerve damage on you. It's a police officer who grabs you by the back of the head or the shoulder, whatever, and slams your face into the ground, or alternatively, shoves you into the back of a police car even if you don't want to get in. It's the police officer who thumbprints you and books you and the rest of it. So The question is, considering their actions and what they've done and how they really don't keep the peace at all, and usually whenever they respond to a call, when somebody foolishly decides to call for them, they usually make a situation worse. So at the end of the day, whether you're looking at the police state-friendly legislation, whatever that happens to be, whether you're looking at the police brutality incidences, whether you're looking at any of these aspects, I mean, they really do comprise, like Roger Root said, they really do comprise, you know, the standing army that the founders warned us about. So why do you worship redcoats? That's the issue. And I'm saying don't worship redcoats. You know, until such time the police are, like, massively scaled back, and the ideal situation is to only have sheriffs, kind of. But in a lot of ways, you see, that's the problem with the constitutional sheriff approach, is that a lot of members of the Patriot community have been thrown into prison because of sheriffs, not because of city cops, not even because of the alphabet federal soup boys, not even the state police in a lot of cases, although those guys are pretty bad too. It's a lot of times county sheriffs. So it's almost like, well, if we can convince some sheriffs to not accept the federal moties from the U.S. Congress, then they're quote-unquote constitutional sheriffs. Besides the fact, I haven't seen any literature anywhere that has actually succinctly proven or even suggested even being possible there is such a thing as a quote-unquote constitutional sheriff. It sounds like a made-up term, like corporate United States or even FEMA camps. I mean, all these mythologies that when you actually look into it, and of course each one of those needs to be tackled on their own merit on a separate time, but each time you look at it, it's like, where's the proof? I mean, and a lot of times the funny part is that a lot of those bits of proof actually point to something else. For example, the FEMA camp thing really doesn't really demonstrate FEMA camp so much. What it really goes to show is more the police state measures, and I would suggest, more importantly, the prison industrial complex that's incarcerating people right now. That's provable. So why worry about some possible future thing, that this possible dystopian thing, that if there was a pretext, all these things would line up? It's like, it may happen, it may not. Yeah, it's one version of it happened during World War II. And it may happen again, but, you know, maybe so, maybe no, maybe this, maybe that, maybe some other thing will pop out of the air. Okay, that's on the horizon. But right now, I mean, technically, hyperinflation is more of a danger, considering the actions of the Federal Reserve. So there's very much a need to prioritize threats. And I would say maybe the threats you should prioritize more are the ones occurring right now. Right now, not tomorrow. Not 5 years from now, right now. And there is plenty of stuff to deal with right now. Now, that's not to say that you shouldn't pay attention to future trends and all that, like growing austerity measures here at home, the formation of they call it global governance right now, but it's world government, much like H.G. Wells wrote about that, or view of which is available on the blog. Just look for The New World Order. He wrote a book on the subject. And yeah, it's about a world state that's this awful socialistic thing. That's what H.G. Wells describes it as, but again, I'll tackle that at a different time. Suffice it to say, though, why does anybody worship redcoats? And here's a final parting thought. Some people think they don't live in a police state. Well, here's a really easy way to test that. When you're driving along in your car, and you're minding your own business, or maybe you're quote-unquote speeding, another victimless crime, you're speeding, quote-unquote, and all of a sudden, maybe you made an improper lane change. Yeah, you know, that's another victimless crime, improper lane change. But you're doing something along those lines, right? You technically violate a technicality, mala prohibita, if you will, you know, that which is forbidden by the state. And you notice in the rearview mirror, and you probably heard it before you saw it, the whirling red and blue lights of the squad car. Now, here is the $64,000 question. Are you excited and happy to see the officer? Like, wow, he's keeping me safe. I just love getting pulled over because this is good. Or do your hands start to shake, get sweaty, your pulse starts to quicken, feel a lump in your throat, you feel very nauseous too, and you're starting to think, oh my God, how the hell am I going to get out of this? And that's the $64,000 question. What is your reaction? Or maybe you have a completely different reaction I can't think of. And I would postulate that if your reaction is the latter, you live in a police state, by definition. Just food for thought. Just stop worshiping the cops already. All right, so for next episode, we will explore more dissident philosophy by examining individuality. I'm Sleepy Salsa, and thanks for listening.